Well, thanks for whatever that was.
You bet, Ron.
So, that was the past, the present, and future. And you did it all in one night.
More or less. Time is funny that way. But there's always a price.
I see. Well, I have to be going now. Got a podcast to do and all.
We know.
I'm sure you do.
What's the podcast gonna be about this week?
Don't you already know?
You still have free will. Time is a scream, and we try to only throw sticks into it.
Another quantum universe reference?
You know it.
Well, I think the podcast will be about the past, present, and future.
We knew that.
I know you did. Well, while I recover from my little trip with my alien friends, here is a 5-minute mystery.
Another 5-minute mystery.
This 5-minute mystery is being brought to you by the past, the present, and the future. You know, you can't have one without the other. While that has nothing to do with this mystery, it still is our sponsor for today. Now, here is our story.
The entrance to the Lawrence house on Center Street is lighted by an unshielded bulb. Beneath it stands a policeman. Suddenly, a woman comes running up the porch steps.
What's the matter? Has something happened?
Do you live here, ma'am?
I'm Mrs. Lawrence's personal maid and housekeeper. I've worked for her for years.
Knew her pretty well, then.
Of course. What do you mean, knew her?
I'm sorry to have to tell you this, ma'am, but Mrs. Lawrence was murdered tonight, a couple of hours ago.
Murdered? Let me go in there. Let me go in.
I'm sorry, ma'am. Anything I can do to help, I'll be glad to do.
Yes, there is one thing you can do. Take me to the police station. Murder, is it? Well, I'll tell a thing or two now. And that's how it was, Inspector. I went out for a couple of hours tonight with my regular night out. And when I came back, that policeman refused to let me in.
I see. Well, Miss...
Just call me Agnes, please, sir. People have for so long now.
All right, Agnes. Now tell me, how long were you gone tonight?
Not more than a couple of hours, Inspector.
I see. Everything was all right when you left?
Perfectly. Everything was fine, except that I never did like the idea of her seeing him again. I believe she was expecting him tonight after I'd left.
And just who is him?
Why, her husband, I mean. They were divorced some years ago. He was a friend.
And Mrs. Lawrence was seeing her husband again?
The last few nights, sir. All of a sudden, unexpected-like, Mrs. Lawrence came in one night and told me her husband was coming for dinner. I told her then I didn't like it.
Was there any trouble?
Not a bit, sir. In fact, things went too well. In fact, I believe Mrs. Lawrence was getting a bit soft on him again, and after all these years, too.
Tell me, where does he live?
Over in Cranville. He's lived there for over a year now.
That's about 15 miles away, isn't it?
That's it, sir.
Well, he could have driven that and been back in time for an alibi. Tell me, did anyone else know that Mr. and Mrs. Lawrence had become friendly again?
Not a soul, sir. It was a secret that just the three of us knew. But if you want my opinion, it was him that poisoned her. Must have been him. There was the very devil in that man.
Agnes, up to a point, I believe you're right. But because of just one thing, one mistake in your story, I'm going to hold you for the murder of Mrs. Lawrence.
The inspector has a good reason for holding Agnes for murder. Do you know what it is? We'll tell you in just a minute, but first...
Okay, we have lots of information here, and if you were listening, it is possible to figure it out. But what you have to do is work a bit outside the box and look at the present and past events. Here's my thought on the matter. I think this one has to do with what was not said. Think about it.
And now, back to our five-minute mystery and the murder of Mrs. Lawrence.
Me? Murder? I wasn't even home when she died.
Agnes, I know it was you who murdered Mrs. Lawrence. When you saw her and her husband becoming friendly again, you believed it would affect your inheritance. How do I know you're the murderer? For just one good reason, Agnes. I specifically gave orders that the method of murder would not be discussed with anyone. You yourself said that Mrs. Lawrence was poisoned. Only one person could have known that. The murderer himself.
Okay, I like how they give us a key piece of information right at the end that makes it all make sense. We had no idea the detective had told his team to not talk about the murder method. Had we known that, big difference. This 5-Minute Mystery was brought to you by the past, the present, and the future. Today's show is all about the past, where we have been, the present, where we are, and the future. We will talk about something that is coming your way very soon. Jason Dowd will join us to talk about the end of an era and the beginning of a new one. But first, let's delve into the past. I've done a lot of interviews over the years on the show, and a few of them mean a heck of a lot to me. For example, when I had author R.A. Salvatore on the show. Another was character actor Anthony James, and still another favorite was H. Allen Day, brother to Supreme Court Justice Sandra Day O'Connor. But what you're about to hear is something pretty amazing and pretty special. I recorded this on February 7th, 2012, and I had no idea of what I was getting into. I am a basketball fan, and not to brag, but I went to my first game with my brother when I was 10 years old. He took me to a Portland Trailblazer game, and I was hooked. In 1998, I became a season ticket holder, and that only tightened my love for my team. At the time, the main stars were Damian Stoudemire, Rasheed Wallace, Arvydas Sabonis, and my absolute favorite, Brian Grant. Brian Grant played 12 years in the NBA as a power forward and was the heart and soul of the Portland Trailblazers while he was there. Oh, and for any other team he played for that matter. In 2008, Brian was diagnosed with young onset Parkinson's disease. Today, he serves as both an advocate and an inspiration for those suffering with Parkinson's. When we did this interview, I was scared stiff, and I was also suffering from a condition known as starstruckness. He put me at ease almost immediately, and of course the rest was history. He told me a story that was utterly amazing, and I have been wanting to share this with you for a very long time. This particular show was actually lost for a while, and then when I did find it, I wasn't able to put it back into the main flow of shows that you can get at ronsamazingstories.com. It had to go to the archive section, and I have regretted that decision ever since. So I'm going to fix that today. Here is that interview from the past, and I hope that you enjoy it as much as I did making it.
Welcome to the podcast, Brian.
Thanks for having me on, Ron. Appreciate it.
First off, let me say I've been a big fan of yours for a very long time. During the years you were a Portland Trailblazer, I had season tickets. One of the things I loved to watch was you and Arvydas Sabonis. His passes led to some massive dunks.
I tell you what, that was a tricky thing, being on the floor with an amazing passer like Arvydas. You know, if you caught the ball, he would continue to feed the ball to you. But if you dropped it, you got the and then you knew that it was going to take a while before he, you know, built some confidence up. But after the first year, I think he pretty much knew if he put it anywhere near me, I was going to catch it and hopefully finish it. So Yeah, I really enjoyed playing with him. He was just, it was easy buckets with him.
So what I guess I'd like to do is, I'd like to hear a little bit about your years in Columbus, Ohio, and where you grew up, and can you talk a little bit about that for us?
Well, I was actually born in Columbus, Ohio, but I grew up in a small town outside of Cincinnati with the borough. When I was growing up there, maybe 2,000 people.
Oh, wow.
1,800. And it was a farming community. Did a lot of cutting tobacco and baling hay and digging potatoes. A lot of farm work. I didn't own a farm, didn't live on a farm, but there were a lot of farms. And it was good, a good little small Midwest town.
Were you interested in basketball in those years, or did that come along later?
It came along later. You know, I grew up around roughly 11 cousins that were either a year older or same age or a year younger, so it was almost like growing up in a family of 12 kids, because we were always together staying at our grandma and grandpa's house. And there was only one girl, and the rest of us were boys, and they all seemed to be into Syracuse, Georgetown, Hoyas. I had no interest. My mother finally took my younger brother and I, and signed us up for Pop Warner football, and that's, you know, I just love football. I love the contact. I love the excitement of trying to, you know, run that ball down the field with people trying to catch you. And then I also love, you know, being able to hit somebody on defense. And it wasn't until I reached high school that I went out for a team. Basketball-wise, I made the freshman team, and then it wasn't until my senior year that I would play again.
So you decided to go to Xavier University. I'm assuming that was just close by, or is there another reason you wanted to go to Xavier?
Well, Xavier was close by. It was only maybe 10 minutes away from where I grew up, so I was close to home. And they were the first major Division I school to offer me a full scholarship. And, you know, I was the first person in my town to ever receive, I take that back, the second person, a girl by the name of Kelly Benintendi. She ended up getting a full ride to Michigan, and she was probably 6 or 7 years older than me. So I was the first person in my family, through any generation, to receive a full ride to school. And the reason why I chose Xavier, they had a great year that year before, where they had Tyrone Hill and Derek Strong, and they beat Alonzo Mourning and Dikembe Mutombo.
Yes.
in the second round to go to the Sweet 16. And then B, because they were the first ones to offer me the scholarship, and I just immediately jumped on it.
Well, and you responded very well. I mean, you led the team in rebounding all for every year you were there, and you weren't you a two-time conference player of the year?
Yes, two-time.
That's incredible. So you were drafted, and you went very high in the first round to the NBA. What was that like when they actually said, hey, we want you on the Sacramento Kings? I've heard a lot of, you know, NBA players talk about it, but to me it would just be almost surreal.
Well, I didn't really believe it when, you know, I didn't believe all the talk that was going on before the draft, because after my senior year, I interviewed four agents. Three agents told me that if I went to the Desert Classic in Phoenix, that I wouldn't be drafted right now. I'm possibly a second-round draft pick and definitely a European player. And there was only one agent that really, truly believed in me, and that was Mark Bartelstein from Priority Sports. And he just told me if I didn't go, it would be the biggest injustice I've ever done myself. You know, so I went with him because he believed in me. And when I got there, it was the same thing. Nobody knew me, no letters to go visit any teams. But after that first game that we had skills in the morning. I'm not a skilled player. You know, people just kind of overlook me. And then that evening, I had Casey Jones from the Boston Celtics coaching our team, and I went to Khalid Reeves and Anthony Goldwire, and I just told him, I said, look, if I get the rebound and I beat everyone down the floor, will you throw it to me? And I'll dunk it and give you the assist. They say, if you beat everybody down the floor, we'll throw it to you. And that's what I did, and I ended up with like 24
wow.
points and 20 rebounds. And then from that, I went from a nobody to everybody wanted to see what was up.
Huh.
And it was just, it was a crazy ride, man. You know, it was a really crazy ride. And then even when my agent said he was getting me an airline ticket to the draft, I told him no. I said,
really?
I don't want to get embarrassed. He said, you're going to be a top 10 pick. And I said, I don't believe it. I'm staying in Cincinnati. And I did. I stayed in Cincinnati with family and friends and watched the draft.
Oh, you weren't even there that night?
No.
Wow. That's incredible. So how was that? When did your family go nuts or?
Yeah, I mean, we were just, I mean, it just, you know, I come from a very poor family, and just, you know, not a lot of hopes and dreams for African-Americans, especially in that region. And to, first of all, go to college there, you know, my grandparents, everyone's so proud of me.
Yeah.
My town was proud of me. But then just the thought that he might make it to the NBA, and then all of a sudden, bam, he's a lottery pick.
Wow.
You know, and it just, it, I think it blew everybody away. I mean, it put our little town on the map. You know, people were very proud to be from Georgetown, Ohio, and just the same as I am.
Well, after you were drafted, you spent a few years with the Sacramento Kings, and you opted out of your contract early, right?
I did, yeah.
And you went free agency and were courted by the Portland Trailblazers. I've always wanted to ask you, of all the teams in the leagues that were going after you, why Portland?
Well, there weren't really a ton of teams going after me. I mean, there were maybe like three.
Oh,
yeah, three. And then there were other teams that were talking, but three seriously were going after me. I didn't like Portland as a city at that point because every time I flew in, it was always raining and dreary and miserable, and I couldn't wait to get out. But I did like that team, and I knew that the atmosphere in Portland was similar to what I would be leaving in Sacramento, because those fans in Sacramento are great. They're awesome fans.
They're true, they are.
Just like the Portland Trailblazer fans are. And so I knew I'd be getting that. Not only that, they had Arvydas Sabonis. They had Rasheed Wallace. They had, you know, J.R. Ryder. They were an up-and-coming team. They were already up. It was just, they were just putting together some pieces to make a run for it. And I figured that I could work my way in there somewhere. I didn't know how it fit along Rasheed Wallace until I got there and realized that he was such a great shooter that he could play the three at his height. So I played the four and he played the three.
Yeah, and you started for two of the years that you were there, right?
I did, and then I had a microfracture surgery and after my second year, and I was kind of a little late getting back. And then, you know, our team was so stacked with talent that coach started off with a lineup, and I thought that I would get that starting position back, but I'm also a team player. I realized that what he had going was working, and me coming off the bench with the secondary was made us even more of a threat as a team. So.
I can't let the Portland Trail Blazers years go by without talking about the conference finals in 2000.
Yeah.
What was that night like when you guys, you'd gone seven games with the Lakers? I was watching that game. I thought, this is in the bag. We're going to the finals. And what was it like on your side? How did you guys feel?
It was surreal. It just it seemed like a dream. It just, we were all like deer caught in the headlight.
Really?
You know, just talking about it just took my mood down because you couldn't imagine how confident we were going into that locker room at halftime. You know, sitting there just making plans. Okay, we're going to Indiana. Oh, I know we can do Indiana. I know we can do it. And then that second half through the third quarter, still up and just kicking. And almost halfway through the fourth quarter, and then all of a sudden it was, I think Robert Horry banked in a three. No, Brian Shaw actually hit that shot. And I remember Brian Shaw hit that shot, and I remember telling myself, man, we released him. And I remember the day we released him off the roster, and he called me and said, look, you guys got an opportunity to win, B. Go for it. You don't get these opportunities that often. And then he signs with L.A.
Mm-hmm.
And then he's the first one that hits that shot. So the guy that we did not put on the roster starts that run against us. And I remember thinking, that, like, a cold chill went down my back, like, uh-oh. That's not right. And then all of a sudden, three here, and we couldn't hit a shot. We couldn't. It did not matter what we did. We couldn't hit a shot. We missed free throws. It just all came apart so quickly that, you know, we were just like caught in the fog. And in the locker room, just looking around the atmosphere, I knew that that was it for me. I knew that this was like a win that an organization really doesn't recover from for years, you know.
And they didn't.
Yeah.
So, moving on, so you played quite a few more years in the NBA up until, I believe, about 2006, is that right?
Correct, yeah. Phoenix was my last team.
Phoenix. I read through some of your background, and you kind of said then that you felt like your skills were leaving you then, is that?
Yeah, I did. I mean, and it was weird. I just assumed because my knees were hurting, and I had my right knee going arthritic. You know, that one was a no-brainer. I understood that. But there were other things, like, you know, I was pretty good at going in and making left-hand layups and, you know, just feeling like I could spring off the ground even with a bad knee. And that all started going away, and I just attributed it to, you know, I'm getting old. But I was only 35, 36, and still had a lot of play in me. But other than the knee, I just could, I sensed something wasn't right. But this is what happens to players. That's what I wrote it off as.
Hmm. So then things went on for your life. You went into retirement. And then in 2008, you were diagnosed. And so what brought that about? Was it just a normal physical, or was it?
No, it was after I retired and I moved back to Miami, I went through a really bad bout of depression. It lasted for like 8 months. And it was the kind of depression where you stay on the couch eating Captain Crunch, watching the Hunting Channel all day. And that was how bad it was for me. I mean, I had a boat, it was beautiful weather, a lot of fishing, a lot of friends, but I couldn't do anything. And so finally, after my wife going through the hell that she went through with my depression, encouraged me to go and seek help. And I did, and I found out that I was deeply depressed. We just attributed it to me retiring. But at the same time, I started to notice that I had a little shake in my hand, like it would twitch every once in a while. And so I went to a neurologist, and he was more concerned with the depression and didn't want to scare me by telling me Parkinson's or anything else. He just said, let's just deal with the depression and see where we are after that. And so I stayed in Miami for a year and a half, and then I just decided, you know what, I want to get out of Miami. I want to get my family back to Portland. Maybe a change of scenery will help, you know, calm me down. And even though it's dreary and rainy out here in Portland, yeah, I have some really good friends, and there's great people out here. Not that there's none in Miami, but I just know more people out here.
Yeah.
And so I moved the family back, and it just continued to get worse and worse. And I knew that I needed to figure out what it was, because I was starting to turn down opportunities to go and try out for anchor jobs and radio positions. I was literally pissing people off because they thought, well, you know, here we are and offering you an opportunity to come in and try out, and you won't come try out. But I couldn't tell them why, because I didn't know what was going on with me, but I was just embarrassed by this tremor in my head. So it wasn't until 2008 that I went in and saw Dr. Nutt up at OHSU and examined me for probably about 20 minutes. And he just looked me in the eye and said, look, I'm prepared to tell you that I believe you have young onset Parkinson's. And it was a blow to the head, you know. It was just like, wow, here I am. You know, I'm having marital problems. I'm having physical problems. I just retired from a game that I've been playing all my life. And, you know, now I just found out that, you know, I have Parkinson's. But, you know, like with everything, man, you got to take these hits in life, and then you got to figure out a way to pick yourself up and get through it. And that's what I eventually did.
Mm. So from there, you started the foundation right after that. Is that correct?
I did. I started the foundation 2 months after I was diagnosed. I received a phone call from Michael J. Fox, and it was, you know, Michael J. Fox is the ultimate person in staying optimistic, and he's a very optimistic individual. He's uplifting, and, you know, I just had a conversation with him that made me, empowered me to get up and join the fight against Parkinson's, and that's when I contacted Lauren Foreman, who ran my children's foundation, and asked her if she'd be, you know, willing to throw an event to raise as much money as we can for the Michael J. Fox Foundation. And that's how we started off. We didn't start off with a foundation. We didn't want to do a foundation. But as we were kind of piecing this event together and starting to meet more and more Parkinson's patients, I realized that, you know, there are a lot of people going through the same issues that I'm going through, and there's really no one thing to help them out when they're newly diagnosed. And I'm not talking about programming after you're diagnosed and things you can do. I'm just talking about a site that you can go to, and after you've received this terrible news, and then find out that you're not alone.
Yeah.
It's not a death sentence. And this disease does not have to be who you are. You can still be who you are. You just live with the disease. You know, we raised $350,000 for the Michael J. Fox Foundation.
Yeah.
You know, we started off with no money, and then we just, you know, because we gave it all to Michael J. Fox, we organized and started off the Brian Grant Foundation.
Yeah. One of the things that I was reading about and I was just very impressed with was the use of Powering Forward. What a great name to begin with, but can you talk a little bit about that, and how did that come about? Is that just something that you came up with in the foundation, or is it
honestly, it started because we were trying to figure out a name for the event. And I figured, you know, why not Powering Forward, because I'm a power forward. And,
yeah, exactly.
And it empowers people to, you know, move forward through this disease. And then we came up with Shake It Till We Make It. And then we're kind of on the fence with that because we didn't want to offend anybody. But then the more I thought about it, you know, Powering Forward is good. But you know what? People need to have a little sense of humor with this thing, too, because it can't be all long faces and dreariness. You got to be able to laugh at this thing, too. So we came up with Shake It Till We Make It. And then once we started developing the website, we were calling it Powering Forward in the beginning, but we've since changed that. And Powering Forward would just be a slogan that we use, and also to highlight kind of my own personal journey through my walk in Parkinson's that people will be able to see on the website. After we started the foundation, you know, our mission is simple. It's to empower unique and fulfilling lives for people living with Parkinson's disease. And our vision is to be the first place that people go to when they're first diagnosed. Like me, I couldn't find any place that encouraged me. It was all medical terms. It was all programming that I had absolutely no clue what it meant for me. I just wanted to know that I wasn't alone and things like that. And so people can, when they're diagnosed or if they have friends or family that are diagnosed, so people can visit briangrant.org, where there's an online community, active online community of Parkinson's patients as well as caregivers that communicate on our online forum. And then there's also video testimonies of people ranging from different ages that talk about when they were diagnosed and how they felt and their concerns. And we've had several people who have visited the site who were newly diagnosed just tell us, you know what, thank you for that. And I wish I had that when I was diagnosed, but I did have Michael J. Fox call me, which was amazing as well.
Yeah, I bet that was shocking.
Yeah. So, you know, and then as far as our programming at the Brain Ground Foundation, exercise and fitness that benefits Parkinson's patients is our main focus right now.
Mm-hmm.
Because we see that there's a great benefit in exercise and healthy eating and living. And then from there, we're going to go into relationships and managing health care to help people manage their health care.
Mm-hmm. On that line, when you say manage their health care, is that to manage it financially or just how to manage?
Well, just managing problems that may arise, like with, you know, your employer.
Oh, I see.
Managing your relationship with your neurologist.
Mm-hmm. That's incredible. I mean, that seems like that would take a lot of work to help people to do those
things. Well, the thing that we do is we recognize other great organizations out there.
Mm-hmm.
Namely, a really good one is right here in our own backyard. It's called Parkinson's Resources of Oregon, and they are great, and they've already got tons of programming. And we would be more or less a pass-through organization.
I see.
That would send people to, look, this is what you're looking to do. The best information for that is right here, and this is what they do. This is their programming that they have going on. And if it's something that we do, we would highlight that. But we already know that we're not trying to reinvent the wheel.
Well, Brian, can you take a few minutes and go over the website names again so we make sure people know how to find you?
Yeah. If you want to contact the Brian Grant Foundation, go to briangrant.org. There's ways to contact us and telephone numbers. Also, you can look at some of our fundraising things that we do, mainly our Shake It Till We Make It event.
Well, I want to thank you for being on the show, Brian. It has been a pleasure.
Thanks, Ron. I appreciate it. Thank you for having me on.
Well, there you have it. Truly an inspirational story, if ever you hear one. I hope you enjoyed listening to the past as much as I did doing the interview. Brian Grant will always be one of my favorite Portland Trailblazers. The Brian Grant Foundation of 2020 is still as strong and helpful as it was in 2012. Today, they are doing such online events as cooking classes, exercise classes, online question and answer discussion about Parkinson's disease, and much, much more. If you want to know more, just head to briangrant.org and you can see how they can help you or how you can help them. That's it for the past. Let's head to the present with your stories.
These are your stories, sent by you, for you.
Why would I call this section The Present? Simple logic. Ron's Amazing Stories is about the stories. You have made this home for your tales that range from the funny to the paranormal, the strange to the sad. I can honestly say that we've had just about every category of yarn that's out there. It is our bread and butter. It is our past, our present, and our future. So today we have three brand new stories sent in by you, for you, and I thank you from the depths of my soul for trusting me with your incredible adventures. Now, for the twist. Stories are our present, but do all stories take place in the here and now? Not always. Let's take this a bit further. All of today's tales form a theme of sorts. You see, they have time in common. Specifically, lost time, or maybe that should be lost in time. Our first story this time is quite an adventure in time. It comes from Kendra Franklin, and this one falls into the category of epic strangeness. Kendra is sending this one in from Thousand Oaks, California, and she has called her story Ghost Hunter. I was about 13 years old when this happened. I had a friend over and we were playing a game with my little brother and sister where we take turns being the ghost hunter. It's the job of the ghost hunter to find the ghost. The other players hide somewhere in the house hoping to scare him or her before being tagged. Any flinch, scream, or fallback would be called a win for the ghost. Well, it was my turn and I was waiting upstairs while our echo was counting down to zero. All of a sudden, my little brother ran upstairs with a bloody nose. He said he was in the broom closet and something hit him really hard in the face. After getting my brother cleaned up, we head downstairs to find that the door to the closet was somehow locked. Under the door, I saw shadows moving. So I was sure that my friend or younger sister was in there, so I called out. Nothing. I go to the room above and bang and stomp on the floor, hoping to get their attention. Doesn't work. 20 minutes later, and we finally get that closet door open. The broom closet was empty, and everything was in its place. Strangely, we couldn't figure out what had hit my brother, and there was no blood on the floor. I asked if he was sure that this is where he was, and he said he was sure. Then it dawned on me that it had been 30 minutes at least since the game began, and there was no sign of my friend or sister. We began to search the house for them, and finally found them both in my room. The very same room where I had gone to bang on the floor. My friend immediately cried out, "Hey, no fair! You couldn't have counted down from 100 already! We haven't even had a chance to hide yet!" I tried to tell them that it had been 30 minutes and told them our story. They said that they'd heard nothing the whole time and they hadn't even left this room. I was scared and didn't understand why they were being so mean hanging on to their story. Then my brother looked at his watch. He said it was 4:30 and that Mom and Dad would be home any minute. My friend looked at her phone and it read 4:00. She began to cry, and I remember a chill going through my body. My parents arrived home about a half hour later. We told them what had happened, but they didn't believe us. However, my dad did say that he had to fix that dumb broom closet door. I asked my dad what time he had, and his watch read exactly 30 minutes earlier than my brother's. To this day, this is still one of the biggest mysteries in our house, and because of this, we never played Ghost Hunter again. We had other strange things happen in that house that I couldn't explain. Also, eventually both my mom and dad had enough weird stuff happen to them that they finally believed our story. I'm 16 now, and we have since moved to a new home. I would like to say that all the weirdness has stopped, but whatever it was moved with us. Kendra Franklin, Thousand Oaks, California. That is a strange story of epic weirdness. I have heard many time slip stories, but never one where the past and present overlapped. Thank you for your story, Kendra. Staying with the theme of time slips, here's another story sent in by Major Robert Stalwart, U.S. Army retired. The Major has called this one the Tacoma Coma. I was walking in downtown Tacoma, Washington, one evening around 9 o'clock. I was on my way to meet a friend at a certain intersection. The year was 1976. I had just enlisted in the U.S. Army and was stationed at Fort Lewis. I remember that it was the month of April. As I was walking, I wondered what time it was, so I looked around for the nearest store so I could find out the time. I looked across the street and there was a walk-in movie theater. I figured that was as good a place as any. Then the weirdest thing happened. I started across the street and the next thing I knew, my vision was clearing up and I was standing in front of the ticket counter inside the theater lobby. I had a ferocious headache and my legs felt unsteady. I recovered a little, but the headache was something else. I bowed and started rubbing my forehead. After a minute or so, I heard a gasp. I looked up, and there was this pretty girl on the other side of the counter with a surprised look on her face. She asked me how I got in. With the throbbing pain in my head, I looked at her and didn't know how to answer her. I was confused. I started to walk toward the counter, and she backed away with a scared look on her face. She asked me again how I got in. I looked up at the wall behind her. There was a clock hanging there. I started to mutter, "What time is it?" She told me that I had better leave or she would call the police. I felt so weird. It's hard to explain. I felt like I had broken through into a territory I didn't recognize. I stood there for a few minutes. That's when the girl went into the back room. I could hear her talking to someone. I turned and started to walk towards the entrance. That's when this big guy came out of the back of the room, walked around the counter, and before I could say anything, grabbed me by the arm and pulled me toward the entryway. He unlocked the door and unceremoniously shoved me outside. He told me, "Get out of here," and then went back inside. I still couldn't figure out what was going on. I stood there looking around, rubbing my head. Then it dawned on me the clock above the girl read past midnight. I looked back at the theater. It had a close sign on the front door. The girl and the guy were still there looking at me. Then the big guy opened the door again and warned me that if I didn't leave, he was going to kick my butt. So I started to walk away, still confused. And as I was walking, I heard the guy say, "I don't know how you got inside with the door being locked, but you better not come back." The headache eventually went away. I never did meet my friend. I went back to that theater many times while stationed at Fort Lewis, and each time I entered, my head would begin to throb. I spent the next 30 years in the Army and went to many different places, had many adventures, but never lost time again. Major Robert Stalwart, Jackson, Mississippi. Time slip stories are the worst because what can you say about them? Time is a funny thing, and while we think it should be constant, obviously that's not always the case. To Robert I say first, thank you for your service, and then for your story. Our last story is inexplicable. You can try to explain it, but in the end, all you can really do is shake your head. It comes from Dan Fontaine, who lives in Oregon. Dan has titled his story, "The Truck Stop That Wasn't." Hello, Ron. First, let me say that I don't believe in paranormal stuff. There are no ghosts, UFOs, Bigfoots, or anything that can't be explained. Our first tendency is to always say that it was supernatural. It's not. I believe in a quantum universe. There are many worlds which exist in parallel at the same space and time as our own. This explains everything. My story begins in 1986. Why then? At the age of one, I made my first trip to Yellowstone. My family has gone back every summer since without fail. If you do the math, that's 34 years and I'm now 35. Jump forward in time to 2005. I was a senior at the University of Oregon. That summer, I had to stay in Eugene for my job, but there was no way I would miss our Yellowstone trip. So I would travel the 840 miles by car to join my family. A friend would ride with me as far as Boise, Idaho. I would drive the last 200-ish miles alone. My car broke down somewhere between Rexburg and St. Anthony. I, being a poor college student, had no cell phone. So I locked up the car and began to walk. After about 2 miles of walking, I was excited to see a truck stop up ahead. It was strange because the closer I got, the stranger I felt. Then came a wave of nausea, and then suddenly, I felt fine. There were just a few cars in front. They were all vintage vehicles. I walked inside and told the waitress my story. She smiled and pointed to the phone booth on the pole outside. I got some change from her and walked out. Another wave of nausea came over me. This time I nearly passed out, but like I said, it passed and I was fine. However, when I arrived at the phone booth, there was no phone, just an old, rusted booth. Very funny, I thought, and turned to go back inside the cafe. There was no cafe. The building was there, but it was all boarded up, and it looked like it had been abandoned for years. I was at a loss. After looking around for a bit, I gave up and began walking again. A few minutes later, a 1950s Chevy pulled up beside me, and the driver asked if I needed help. I got in and thought the strangeness was returning, but he reached into his glove box and produced a cell phone. I called for a tow truck and he drove me back to my car. I also called my folks, but I didn't tell them about my phantom truck stop. Dan Fontaine, Oregon. Well, Dan, I can't say if that was a quantum paradox or a supernatural time slip, but I do know this. It is a very strange story. Thank you for sharing it. All right, so far, you've heard something from the past, and you've heard something from the present. Now, I'm going to give you something for the future. I do have some sad news to report. We've talked about it before. We are coming to the end of the line of the Horror Express. That means that while the train may ride again, maybe sometime in October during the month of Spooky, the Horror Express is run its course. So with that, Jason and I got to talking, and what we wanted to do was create a new program called The Paranormal with Jason. And the reason for this is because Jason and I both loved answering your questions. It was the best part of the show for us when you would send in your questions about the things we talked about, the things that we... Well, you know, this doesn't make much sense for me to sit here and talk about it myself. Maybe I should bring Jason in to help. Jason, are you there by chance?
I sure am.
Well, what do you think about that? What do you think about the end of the line for the Horror Express?
Well, I mean, it's been a lot of fun, and we've been doing it for so long, and I'm definitely going to miss it. But I do like new changes and new opportunities, and this sounds like a really fun way of doing that. You know, we could talk about some of our own personal experiences. We can hear from people that have had some experiences and some people that just have questions. And I love that. And I think it's going to be a fun time for all of us.
Now, let me just to make sure that we're on the same page here. Am I right in saying that the questions from the listeners were our favorite part of the Horror Express?
Well, it was for me. I love talking to people, and I love hearing their questions. And some of them were pretty crazy. I mean, they were like, wow, you really dove into that one. And then there were some that were just fun little answering, you know, questions and answers that we could do. And, you know, they didn't take a lot of deep thought to it, but yet they were fun and exciting as well. So, you know, even the criticism that we got sometimes, it was fun. You know, I like that. So, yeah, it was my favorite.
Yeah, well, let's take a walk down memory lane here, and you tell me, was that a good time or a bad time?
Okay.
All right, here we go. The dolls.
Oh, that was a good time. That was a really good time, and it never stopped. That was one of the craziest things.
How many episodes on dolls did we do?
Probably six, at least.
That was crazy. And, of course, the second big one, curses.
Yes, that was crazy. That was probably the second most intriguing topic that I think we had. And I think it's because that, you know, some people believe in them, some people don't believe in them. But no matter what, bad things happen to us, and sometimes we hear it and we it happens. So was it a curse? Was it not a curse? And I love that. I love that debate. I hopefully we'll be able to talk about a little bit more about those in this new segment that we're doing too.
Oh, I'm sure we will. So let us talk about the new segment. What kinds of things can we expect for the paranormal with Jason?
Well, I plan on doing a lot more ghost hunting. Now, I stopped a long time ago because of my sickness. I didn't really want to put myself out there because sometimes when you're weakened, you can actually attract bad things. However, I'm not going to let that stop me anymore. I got reconnected with my friends that I used to go ghost hunting with, and I plan on doing a lot of it. So I plan on doing as much as I can to be able to bring you some stories, to be able to bring you some firsthand experiences. And of course, I definitely want to talk about these UFOs that we've been seeing on TV now. And it's sad that it's not even news. You know, it's sad. So, you know, I want to talk about stuff like that. And I love talking about the cryptozoology and all those other kind of crazy animals that are out there. And, yeah, I'm looking forward to seeing what we can come up with. And like I said, I'll tell you some of my stories from the past, some of my experiences that I you know, did just recently. And I think we're going to have a lot of fun. I think we're going to be able to go to a lot of different places just through the storytelling process that we're going to be doing.
Well, I'm glad you said that, Jason, because for me, it is all about storytelling. Mm-hmm. And what I hope for this segment is that you, the listeners, will bring us some stories that we can sink our teeth in and be able to share with you and then comment about them. What do we think about them? How do we feel about them? What do we think they could be? And while we would not venture to say this is truth, this is what it is, it sure is fun to offer opinions.
It is. And I hope they do.
Well, in that spirit, Jason, let's give them a little taste of what we hope this is going to be about. What do you think?
I love it, and I can do one real quick myself. So let's hear what you have. I want to hear what you got.
Well, I have an email, and it was sent in by Carrie Pittman, who lives in Twin Falls, Idaho, and she has called this story Grandma's Wishes. Now, Jason, do you want to hear it, or shall I just put it away?
No, I want to hear. Let's hear what Grandma's wishes are.
Okay. Hello, Ron. I've been wanting to write in for a long time, and when I heard you asking for ghost stories, I knew I had to do it. This isn't necessarily my story, but my niece's Sally. She was 4 years old at the time. Last year, a little before Christmas, her grandmother passed away, and we were slowly been working through the house, going through her stuff. You know, things like knickknacks, clothes, pictures, etc. Basically, we were dividing everything up between the family. Well, my brother has been staying at the house, getting it ready for the sale during the time we were going through Granny's things, and that he said at night Sally kept sleepwalking. They would find her wandering through the house, saying things like, "Leave, this is my house," and "Don't touch that," or "Why are you doing this?" Well, we all came to the conclusion that this was her grandmother talking through her. Sally also says that she sees Granny and talks to her. I would like to know what you think. It is comforting to think that my mom is watching over us, but I hope she doesn't feel bad about her stuff. Carrie Pittman, Twin Falls, Idaho. Well, Jason, if there isn't a story in the world that isn't up your alley, this is it. This one is right there for you. I'm going to let you have first crack at it.
All right. Well, first of all, I absolutely love that story, and it's both horrifying but yet comforting at the same time. You know, I truly believe that if people die, sometimes they don't understand that they are dead. And so she might be going through there not understanding what's going on. That will eventually change, but, you know, I could see the frustration that was happening. Now, it's also very possible that it's just a person that was staying there that was sleepwalking, just having an issue to where they were channeling kind of their grandmother and acting out their grandmother. So there's two different scenarios that can happen, but I truly believe that that is a very good possibility that her grandmother was channeling through her. I mean, when you think about what she said and how she said it, it makes total sense that it would be something that can be channeled. That doesn't mean it's a bad thing. It just means it's a comforting thing that you know that that she's there and she doesn't quite understand. I don't think she's going to be upset about her stuff eventually, but I think she is going to find a whole new way of communicating with you guys. And I really hope that you'll be able to embrace that and have time with your grandmother, even though she's passed away.
Well, and I look at it in a different way. I think that, you know, we don't know. They didn't say how the grandmother died, but It could have been quite shocking. And I have heard stories that people find it hard to move on once they've had the shocking event of dying. And she could be wandering through the house going, "They're just destroying my house and they're taking my things and I don't want them to touch that. That's mine," you know. And so I would liken unto shock, maybe, that she is just not ready to pass. Now, will she pass it sometime? Will it occur to her? Maybe she'll need some help. Maybe that house will go on and be haunted for the rest of the days. We really don't know. But we do know this, is that it is not normal for a four-year-old to walk around the house at night making comments like, "Leave, this is my house, and don't touch that." So right. I would say there's something to this. And I hope that they do make contact with Granny and that she passes over and has a good afterlife.
Me too. I hope so too.
So, Jason, now you said you have a story for us?
Yeah, a quick little story. It won't take but a second. But anyways, this is going to be, I'm going to leave you guys with a cliffhanger, kind of. Do you remember a couple of months ago, or almost a year ago, when we did that story where I investigated that little puppet, that little haunted puppet? Okay.
Oh, yes.
Well, I did it for a while. I continued going on and researching it, and eventually I just got nothing, so I just kind of gave up with it, and I left it out in my garage, and that's where it sat. Well, about 3 days ago, I'm sitting there in my office, and I said, "You know what? I haven't seen that doll in a while." So I went outside and I ran into my wife and I said, "Hey, so you remember that haunted doll out in our garage?" She's like, "Yeah." I said, "Have you seen it lately?" Her eyes got really big. She's like, "Oh God, no." So we went outside in the garage and it was gone. Now,
gone?
I know what happened, but I want everybody out there, and I'll talk about this on our actual first show.
Oh, what happened, Jason, you're so mean.
I know I'm mean, but I want to know what you guys think. Did it physically get up and walk away? Is it completely gone forever? Is it just in a different spot? Was it simply misplaced by somebody? Give it a shot. I want to hear what you guys got to say.
I'm going to go for the creepy thing. I'm going to say that it got tired of you ignoring it, and it got up and walked away.
Okay. Well, I want to hear a lot of comments on this. I want to hear everybody what they got to say, and we'll do it on the pilot show of Paranormal with Jason. I promise you that.
All right, Jason. So if you want to make your comment, send them to ronsamazingstories@gmail.com and just include in the subject, "Here's where I think that doll went." and we'll read those on the air. What do you think, Jason?
Oh, I'm excited. I want to hear what people got to say about this.
All right. So again, send us where you think those dolls went to ronsamazingstories@gmail.com, and we will read your thoughts. And then we'll have Jason tell us the awful truth or whatever it might be. Well, Jason, now I've got you here. I haven't talked to you in a while, and I do need to know what's going on with Gladys Goodies.
Well, Gladys Goodies has been through a lot recently. And unfortunately, some of you may or may not know, on April 2nd, we lost Gladys. Devastated us. And it was kind of like a shock. But regardless, she's gone. And I promised her I was never going to let this thing go down. So that was just a few weeks after the coronavirus lockdown and everything. So what we have done since then is we've been working on making sure that we get the treats out to everybody, but we've been doing it a little differently. We've been doing it to order as opposed to having constant supply. You know, if somebody has an order, we place the order, we make it, takes a little bit longer, but it has the minimal amount of exposure to anybody. So we use extra precautions and everything else. So we do take care of that. We just introduced our liver treats for cats and dogs. And we also have our cat line that we were still working on. And we're having some new sticks that we're trying out that are going to be vegetarian snacks for dogs that cannot eat meat. There are some of them out there, believe it or not. So they're going to be a mixture of fruits and vegetables that help their skin, helps their digestion, helps a little bit of everything, but it's still absolutely yummy for them to eat. So we haven't quite set those out yet, but those are something we are working on currently. And I'm just waiting back for some feedback.
Well, I can give you feedback on the fish. My cat loves the salmon.
That's great. I love to hear
that. He will rip my hand out to get the salmon.
Well, I love to hear stuff like that.
It's dangerous. It literally is dangerous. once he hears that little sound of the jar opening, mm-hmm. It's like he's there. And then he's looking at you. Now, you best drop it on the floor is what he says with his eyes. I'm not even kidding. That is how good the salmon treats are. So,
well, I'm glad he likes them.
Yeah, kudos to you for the salmon. I haven't had the liver here for him, so you're going to have to send me some samples of the liver.
I had sent some samples, and that was right when the virus hit. So it's a good chance it probably got lost. So I will definitely send you some more.
All right. All right, Jason. Well, tell us how we can find Gladys Goodies and remind them about our promo code.
Okay, yes, it is. The promo code gets you 25% off by using RONS, RONS, at checkout. And you can go to GladysGoodies.com, GladysGoodies.com. And if you want to try the stuff first, that is not a problem. The only thing I can't do that with right now is liver, because it's just something that we do per order basis, because it's a small piece. So anything else you can get a free sample of. I have a couple of different sample packs that you can try, and that's right on the homepage. So if you want to try that first and then buy something, and because you want to see what the dog likes more or the cat likes more, please do so. And
salmon treats.
Again, salmon treats. And then after that, we would love to be able to help you and make your dog's tail wag. We have a new saying now that every time a dog's tail wags from Gladys Goodies, Gladys gets her wings. So I want to give her the biggest wings that she could have.
And she's going to continue to be the face of Gladys Goodies. That's good.
Yes, she is.
That's awesome. Well, Jason, I want to thank you again for doing this on short notice. It has been a pleasure to have you on, and thank you for being part of the future of Ron's Amazing Stories.
Well, I'm excited to be a part of the future, and I cannot wait for our adventures.
Oops, we did episode number 439. This time, Kendra Franklin, Major Robert Stalwart, Dan Fontaine, Carrie Pittman, and Jason Dowd from Gladys Goodies helped make this show a great show. If you want to follow the podcast or the blog, just head to ronsamazingstories.com. There you will find the links you'll need. Do you want to help the show? The best thing you can do is to tell your friends about it, and please leave reviews or feedback wherever you listen. Pressing that follow or like button makes us grow. Thank you for listening, and I hope you come again to find out what are Ron's Amazing Stories.